Chapter 21. His labors. In another, the vested interest of the profitable nuisance has been in one family for 100 years, and the landlord drives in comfortably from the country to his snug little stew in town. In all, Inspector Field is received with warmth. Coiners and smashers droop before him, pickpockets defer to him, the gentle sex, not very gentle here, smile upon him. Half-drunken hacks check themselves in the midst of pots of beer, or pints of gin, to drink to Mr. Field, and pressingly to ask the honor of his finishing the draft. One beldam in rusty black has such admiration for him, that she runs a whole street's length, to shake him by the hand, tumbling into a heap of mud by the way, and still pressing her attentions, when her very form has ceased to be distinguishable through it. Before the power of the law, the power of superior sense, for common thieves are fools beside these men, and the power of a perfect mastery of their character, the garrison of Rat's Castle and the adjacent fortresses make but a skulking show indeed, when reviewed by Inspector Field. St. Giles' clock says it will be midnight in half an hour, and Inspector Field says we must hurry to the old mint in the borough. The cab driver is low-spirited, and has a solemn sense of his responsibility. Now, what's your fare, my lad? Oh, you know, Inspector Field, what's the good of asking me? Say, Parker, strapped and great-coated, and waiting in Dimborough doorway by appointment, to replace the trusty Rogers whom we left deep in St. Giles, are you ready? Ready, Inspector Field, and at a motion of my wrist behold my flaming eye. This narrow street, sir, is the chief part of the old mint, full of low lodging houses, as you see by the transparent canvas lamps and blinds, announcing beds for travelers. But it is greatly changed, friend Field, from my former knowledge of it. It is infinitely quieter, and more subdued, than when I was here last, some 7 years ago? Oh yes. Inspector Haynes, a first-rate man, is on this station now, and plays the devil with them. Well, my lads. How are you tonight, my lads? Playing cards here, eh? Who wins? Why, Mr. Field, I, the sulky gentleman with the damp flat side curls, rubbing my bleared eye with the end of my neckerchief which is like a dirty eel skin, am losing just at present, but I suppose I must take my pipe out of my mouth, and be submissive to you. I hope I see you well, Mr. Field. Aye, all right, my lad. Deputy, who have you got upstairs? Be pleased to show the rooms. Why, Deputy, Inspector Field can't say. He only knows that the man who takes care of the beds and lodgers is always called so. Steady, oh Deputy, with the flaring candle in the blacking bottle, for this is a slushy backyard, and the wooden staircase outside the house creaks, and has holes in it. Again, in these confined intolerable rooms, burrowed out like the holes of rats, or the nests of insect vermin, but fuller of intolerable smells, are crowds of sleepers, each on his foul truckle bed coiled up beneath a rug. Hollow here. Come. Let us see you. Show your face. Pilot Parker goes from bed to bed, and turns their slumbering heads towards us, as a salesman might turn sheep. Some wake up with an execration and a threat. What? Who spoke? Oh! If it's the accursed glaring eye that fixes me, go where I will, I am helpless. Here. I sit up to be looked at. Is it me you want? Not you, lie down again. And I lie down, with a woeful growl. Whenever the turning lane of light becomes stationary for a moment, some sleeper appears at the end of it, submits himself to be scrutinized, and fades away into the darkness. There should be strange dreams here, Deputy. They sleep sound enough, says Deputy, taking the candle out of the blacking bottle, snuffing it with his fingers, throwing the snuff into the bottle, uncorking it up with the candle. That's all I know. What is the inscription, Deputy, on all the discolored sheets? A precaution against loss of linen. Deputy turns down the rug of an unoccupied bed and discloses it. Stop thief. To lie at night, wrapped in the legend of my slinking life. To take the cry that pursues me, waking, to to my breast in sleep, to have it staring at me and clamoring for me as soon as consciousness returns, to have it for my first foot on New Year's Day, my Valentine, my birthday salute, my Christmas greeting, my parting with the old year. Stop thief. And to know that I must be stopped, come what will. To know that I am no match for this individual energy and keenness, or this organized and steady system. Come across the street, here, and, entering by a little shop and yard, examine these intricate passages and doors, contrived for escape, flapping and counter-flapping, like the lids of the conjurer's boxes. But what avail they? Who gets in by a nod, and shows their secret working to us? Inspector Field. Don't forget the old farmhouse, Parker. Parker is not the man to forget it. We are going there now. It is the old manor house of these parts, and stood in the country once. Then, perhaps, there was something, which was not the beastly street, to see from the shattered low fronts of the overhanging wooden houses we are passing under shut up now, pasted over with bills about the literature and drama of the mint, and moldering away. This long paved yard was a paddock or a garden once, or a court in front of the farmhouse. Perchance, with a dovecot in the center, and fowls peeking about with fair elm trees then, where discolored chimney stacks and gables are now noisy then, with rooks which have yielded to a different sort of rookery. It's likelier than not, Inspector Field thinks, as we turn into the common kitchen, which is in the yard, and many paces from the house. Well, my lads and lasses, how are you all? Where's Blackie, who has stood near London Bridge these 25 years, with a painted skin to represent disease? Here he is, Mr. Field. How are you, Blackie? Jolly, sir. Not playing the fiddle tonight, Blackie? Not a night, sir. A sharp, smiling youth, the wit of the kitchen, interposes. He ain't musical tonight, sir. I've been giving him a moral lecture. I've been a-talking to him about his latter end, you see. A good many of these are my pupils, sir. This here young man, smoothing down the hair of one near him, reading a Sunday paper, is a pupil of mine. I'm a-teaching of him to read, sir. He's a promising cove, sir. He's a smith, he is, and gets his living by the sweat of the brow, sir. So do I, myself, sir. This young woman is my sister, Mr. Field. She's getting on very well too. I've a deal of trouble with them, sir, but I'm richly rewarded. Now I see them all a doing so well, and growing up so creditable. That's a great comfort, that is, and it, sir. In the midst of the kitchen, the whole kitchen is in ecstasies with this impromptu chaff, sits a young, modest, gentle-looking creature, with a beautiful child in her lap. She seems to belong to the company, but is so strangely unlike it. She has such a pretty, quiet face and voice, and is so proud to hear the child admired thinks you would hardly believe that he is only 9 months old. Is she as bad as the rest, I wonder? Inspectorial experience does not engender a belief contrariwise, but prompts the answer, not a ha'porth of difference. There is a piano going in the old farmhouse as we approach. It stops. Landlady appears. Has no objections, Mr. Field, to gentlemen being brought, but wishes it were at earlier hours, the lodgers complaining of ill convenience. Inspector Field is polite and soothing, knows his woman and the sex. Deputy, a girl in this case, shows the way up a heavy, broad old staircase. Kept very clean, in two clean rooms where many sleepers are, and where painted panels of an older time look strangely on the truckle beds. The sight of whitewash and the smell of soap, two things we seem by this time to have parted from in infancy, make the old farmhouse a phenomenon, and connect themselves with the so curiously misplaced picture of the pretty mother and child long after we have left it, long after we have left, besides, the neighboring nook with something of a rustic flavor in it yet, where once, beneath the low wooden colonnade still standing as of yore, the eminent Jack Shepherd condescended to regale himself, and where, now, two old bachelor brothers in broad hats who are whispered in the mint to have made a compact long ago that, if either should ever marry, he must forfeit his share of the joint property,
still keep a sequestered tavern, and sit o' nights smoking pipes in the bar, among ancient bottles and glasses, as our eyes behold them. How goes the night now?
St. George of Southwark answers with 12 blows upon his bell.
Parker, good night, for Williams is already waiting over in the region of Ratcliffe Highway, to show the houses where the sailors dance.
I should like to know where Inspector Field was born.
In Ratcliffe Highway, I would have answered with confidence, but for his being equally at home wherever we go.
He does not trouble his head as I do, about the river at night.
He does not care for its creeping, black and silent, on our right there, rushing through sluice gates, lapping at piles and posts and iron rings, hiding strange things in its mud, running away with suicides and accidentally drowned bodies faster than midnight funeral should, and acquiring such various experience between its cradle and its grave.
It has no mystery for him.
Is there not the Thames police?
Accordingly, Williams leads the way. We are a little late, for some of the houses are already closing.
No matter. You show us plenty.
All the landlords know Inspector Field.
All pass him, freely and good-humoredly, wheresoever he wants to go.
So thoroughly are all these houses open to him, and our local guide, that, granting that sailors must be entertained in their own way as I suppose they must, and have a right, to be I hardly know how such places could be better regulated.
Not that I call the company very select, or the dancing very graceful, even so graceful as that of the German sugar bakers, whose assembly, by the Minories, we stopped to visit, but there is watchful maintenance of order in every house, and swift expulsion where need is.
Even in the midst of drunkenness, both of the lethargic kind and the lively, there is sharp landlord supervision, and pockets are in less peril than out of doors.
These houses show, singularly, how much of the picturesque and romantic there truly is in the sailor, requiring to be especially addressed.
All the songs sung in a hailstorm of halfpence, which are pitched at the singer without the least tenderness for the time, or tuned mostly from great rolls of copper carried for the purpose, and which he occasionally dodges like shot as they fly near his head,
are of the sentimental sea sort. All the rooms are decorated with nautical subjects. Wrecks, engagements, ships on fire, ships passing lighthouses on iron-bound coasts, ships blowing up, ships going down, ships running ashore, men lying out upon the main yard in a gale of wind, sailors and ships in every variety of peril, constitute the illustrations of fact. Nothing can be done in the fanciful way, without a thumping boy upon a scaly dolphin.
How goes the night now?
Past one. Black and green are waiting in Whitechapel, to unveil the mysteries of Wentworth Street.
Williams, the best of friends must part.
Adieu.
Are not black and green ready at the appointed place?
Oh yes.
They glide out of shadow as we stop.
Imperturbable black opens the cab door. Imperturbable green takes a mental note of the driver.
Both green and black then open each his flaming eye, and marshal us the way that we are going.
The lodging house we want is hidden in a maze of streets and courts.
It is fast shut.
We knock at the door, and stand hushed looking up for a light at one or other of the bedroomed old lattice windows, in its ugly front, when another constable comes up supposes that we want to see the school.
Apostrophe Detective Sergeant meanwhile has got over a rail, opened a gate, dropped down an area, overcome some other little obstacles, and tapped at a window.
Now returns.
The landlord will send a deputy immediately.
Deputy is heard to stumble out of bed.
Deputy lights a candle, draws back a bolt or two, and appears at the door.
Deputy is a shivering shirt and trousers by no means clean, a yawning face,
a shock head much confused externally and internally.
We want to look for someone.
You may go up with the light, and take 'em all, if you like, says Deputy, resigning it, and sitting down upon a bench in the kitchen with his 10 fingers sleepily twisting in his hair.
Halloa here.
Now then.
Show yourselves.
That'll do.
it's not you. Don't disturb yourself anymore. So on, through a labyrinth of airless rooms, each man responding, like a wild beast, to the keeper who has tamed him, and who goes into his cage. What, you haven't found him then? Says deputy, when we came down. A woman mysteriously sitting up all night in the dark by the smoldering ashes of the kitchen fire, says it's only tramps and cadgers here, it's gone off over the way. A man mysteriously walking about the kitchen all night in the dark, bids her hold her tongue. We come out. Deputy fastens the door, and goes to bed again. Black and green, you know Bark, lodging housekeeper and receiver of stolen goods? Oh yes, Inspector Field. Go to Bark's next. Bark sleeps in an inner wooden hutch, near his street door. As we parley on the step with Bark's deputy, Bark growls in his bed. We enter, and Bark flies out of bed. Bark is a red villain and a wrathful, with a sanguine throat that looks very much, as if it were expressly made for hanging, as he stretches it out, in pale defiance, over the half door of his hutch. Bark's parts of speech are of an awful sort, principally adjectives. I won't, says Bark, have no adjective police and adjective strangers in my adjective premises. I won't, by adjective and substantive. Give me my trousers, and I'll send the whole adjective police to adjective and substantive. Give me, says Bark, my adjective trousers. I'll put an adjective knife in the whole biling of 'em. I'll punch their adjective heads. I'll rip up their adjective substantives. Give me my adjective trousers, says Bark, and I'll spile the biling of 'em. Now, Bark, what's the use of this? Here's Black and Green, Detective Sergeant, and Inspector Field. You know we will come in. I know you won't, says Bark. Somebody give me my adjective trousers. Bark's trousers seem difficult to find. He calls for them as Hercules might for his club. Give me my adjective trousers, says Bark, and I'll spile the biling of 'em. Inspector Field holds that it's all one, whether Bark likes the visit, or don't like it. He, Inspector Field, is an inspector of the detective police, Detective Sergeant is Detective Sergeant, Black and Green are constables in uniform. Don't you be a fool, Bark, or you know it will be the worse for you. I don't care, says Bark. Give me my adjective trousers. At 2 o'clock in the morning, we descend into Bark's low kitchen, leaving Bark to foam at the mouth above, and imperturbable Black and Green to look at him. Bark's kitchen is crammed full of thieves, holding a conversation there by lamplight. It is by far the most dangerous assembly we have seen yet. Stimulated by the ravings of Bark, above, their looks are sullen, but not a man speaks. We ascend again. Bark has got his trousers, and is in a state of madness in the passage with his back against a door that shuts off the upper staircase. We observe, in other respects, a ferocious individuality in Bark. Instead of stop thief, apostrophe on his linen, he prints stolen from Bark's. Apostrophe, apostrophe, now, Bark, we are going upstairs. No, you ain't. You refuse admission to the police, do you, Bark? Yes, I do. I refuse it to all the adjective police, and to all the adjective substantives. If the adjective coves in the kitchen was men, they'd come up now, and do for you. Shut me that there door, says Bark, and suddenly we are enclosed in the passage. They'd come up, and do for you, cries Bark, and waits. Not a sound in the kitchen. They'd come up, and do for you, cries Bark again, and waits. Not a sound in the kitchen. We are shut up, half a dozen of us, in Bark's house in the innermost recesses of the worst part of London. In the dead of the night the house is crammed with notorious robbers and ruffians, and not a man stirs. No, Bark. They know the weight of the law, and they know Inspector Field and company too well. We leave Bully Bark, to subside at leisure out of his passion and his trousers, and, I dare say, to be inconveniently reminded of this little brush before long. Black and Green do ordinary duty,
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.